Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Recently, I was standing by the wood stove, flossing my teeth, watching Ollie on the dog couch playing with his ball. At this point, I should probably stop to explain why I was flossing my teeth in front of the wood stove in the first place. Most people would probably be flossing their teeth in the bathroom, but to be honest with you, flossing my teeth isn't one of my favorite activities. On the other hand, I know that if I don't do it properly and long enough, my teeth are going to fall apart like everything else is falling apart at this age. So I try to make it as enjoyable an experience for myself as possible. Standing in front of a mirror watching myself floss my teeth is not what I consider conducive to doing anything but the minimal amount of flossing. Standing in front of a mirror watching myself floss my teeth in a chilly bathroom is even less appealing. On the other hand, if I floss my teeth in front of the wood stove where it's warm, I can watch all kinds of things. And the most common things I watch, why do that, are the pets. So on this particular morning, I was watching Ollie on the dog couch. And the dog couch isn't really a dog couch. It's not even a couch. It's a chaise, an old Victorian chaise that I've had for over 10 years, and I keep telling myself, I really like it. I like the lines of it and everything else, but some of the springs are gone and some of the padding shot, and so I need to redo the whole thing. But in the meantime, the dogs have commandeered it, and I cover it with a flannel duvet to make it look more like it's not what it is, which is a piece of junk sorely in need of help. And then because the duvet isn't long enough to cover the whole chaise, I have a piece of denim at one end of it. And then to make it look like this was really done on purpose and based on the highest aesthetic principles, I keep a pillow on there that matches the real couch. So people think that this is all very well planned, a la Martha Stewart. So that's where Ollie was, and I could tell that he had dug the pillow down so that instead of being aesthetically pleasing up against the back of the chaise and tying this mismatch of denim and flannel and everything else together, it was down flat on the seat of the chaise. And he was digging and digging and digging at the corner of it, and I realized that he was playing a game with himself. Unlike his mother, Fricka, who's loved playing with little balls, and these are balls that look like miniature tennis balls, and Frick loved playing with them from the time she was a puppy. And I've always had them around, but Ollie never paid any attention to them until he was about a year old. And then one day, he just discovered them. And since then, he's been playing with the balls, making up games. And that's what he was doing this morning. He had hidden the ball under the pillow. And then after he hid the ball there, then he would dig up the corner of the pillow, discover the ball as if he had just discovered the mother load of treasure or prey or who knows what, and then try to pounce and grab the ball before the pillow came down and covered it again. This isn't a little pillow. This is a big pillow. This is about... I'm standing here looking at it. I guess it's about 14, 16 inches square. So it completely fills the seat of the chaise between its arms. And I'll try to remember to take a picture of the chaise so you can see this marvelous piece of furniture. So to grab that ball before the pillow came down was not easy because it's a tight fit. And so he would repeat this and he would repeat it. And then eventually he mastered that, and he went on to what I assume was phase two of his game, which was to flip the ball up in the air, away from the pillow, and then when the ball came down, sometimes it would get caught in the folds of the duvet on the side of the chaise, And then he would have to figure out some way to flip them out or flip the ball out or with his nose or dig it out with his feet or grab it with his teeth. And the whole time I was flossing my teeth in front of the wood stove, which was several minutes, he was doing this. He was playing with this ball and running through this repertoire of games that he had invented to amuse himself. Naturally, this got me thinking about canine intelligence and what it's capable of. And I wondered what it would take to train a dog to do this. No doubt it wouldn't be easy. I suspect that anyone who succeeded in doing this and then set it to music would surely win a prize for something, because people would say, my goodness, I mean, it'd be extraordinary to do that, you know, to capture those behaviors and to reward those behaviors and to string them all together so that you came out with this finished product, this sequence that makes it look like the dog. Notice that makes it look like the dog has hidden the ball under the pillow and then hunts for the ball and then finds the ball and then throws the ball and then gets it caught in the folds of the material and then digs it out. And then if that doesn't work, then the dog tries to grab the ball with his teeth. And when that doesn't work, then he flips it up with his nose and then he catches it. I mean, that's a 10 score performance, right? In terms of training ability and choreography and all of that. What an intelligent, knowledgeable trainer it must be who could get a dog to do that. I'm not sure what it makes me that I just stand here and my dog does that all by himself. Does that make me lesser? In some people's eyes, I'm sure it does. But I've been thinking a lot about learning environments lately, about creating kind of an environment that enables a dog, an animal, or a child to learn. You know, that kind of secure environment where everything's taken care of, they don't have to protect anything. They're not responsible for what their owners or their parents do. If they're not sure of something, they can just orient toward that person and know that that person's going to handle it. So now they've got the time, they've got the freedom, they've got the security to be creative, to recreate, to play. One of my favorite sayings about students, about kids, about animals and teaching was originally about teaching. It was supposedly written by Lao Tzu. Teachers are best when students barely know they exist. Not so good when students worship and adore them. Worse when students despise them. Of a good teacher, when his job is done and his goals fulfilled, the student will say, I did this myself. The worship and adore makes me think of all positive treat training. Fear and despising makes me think of using punishment to train a dog. Setting up an animal to learn for him or herself, to think, to believe, and rightfully so, that they taught themselves, is hard. It's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult to stand and watch a dog play with a ball and get it stuck and not want to think, oh, here, I know how to do it. I'll show you an easier way. Do it my way, and I'll give you a treat. Stand there and let the dog figure it out. To do it in the way that is the most energy efficient and the most rewarding for the dog is hard. I mean, it's really, really hard. And if you have trouble doing this, if you have trouble allowing your animal to figure things out, take my advice. Get yourself some dental floss. Occupy your hands. make it so you have to keep your mouth shut and let your pet figure it out for him or herself. Trust me on this. You'll be very, very pleased with the results. Not only will you have healthier teeth and gums, you'll have learned about animal intelligence and how animals learn, and your pet will have benefited from this too. All in all, I can't see any reason not to do it. Can you?
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.